The Right to Rock.
Nightmare Studios, you're listening to the Genghis and Rakhnan Show, brought to you by therighttorock.com. What's up? And now get ready for two guys who are so metal, their doctors are licensed mechanics. It's Genghis and Rakhnan.
Cool, man. That was we decided to open the show with a little bit of Lordy.
Lordy.
Mr. Lordy was so nice to join us on Halloween night.
That was pretty cool. It's too bad we had to, fucking Pimples came and fucked us. And,
yeah, pretty much.
I guess he also kind of saved us.
He did kind of save
us. Admittedly.
Yeah. But that was off their brand new record, Scare Force 1. That was House of Ghosts. And what a cool story Mr. Lordy shared with us. For you guys that haven't checked out the Halloween show, I recommend it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he kind of been doing the same thing for a while. Not to take away from what he does. I'm just saying, you know, they do some concept-y stuff in the sort of horror sort of arena. And, I mean, they've got it down to a science. I mean, they do a good job with it.
Yeah,
always
agree.
Turning out pretty good shit. I like this. I like the music. I have to admit, I thought in my head for some reason that it was a different kind of sound. And then once I heard it off the new album, I was like, oh, this is their sound, and I really dig it.
Well, you probably think, by looking at them, you're probably thinking gore.
Exactly. I guess that's what I was expecting when I first saw them. And
it's not that style of music. It's more enriched in, like, 80s Alice Cooper.
Yeah, which is really cool, which really kind of fits when you think about it. That soul, that whole kind of Cooper kind of aesthetic, you know, going in with this old horror vibe with that kind of music from that time, that era when Cooper was kicking it.
Well, I liked, it was kind of interesting that, how he was talking about having to change up the costumes. Kind of like Kiss did back in the day. And I guess these days I don't really pay attention like I used to.
Right.
But they used to come out with costumes. It seemed like about every record there was a new costume or something like that. But he's doing a lot. He's doing the same sort of thing. And then he gets slammed on, I guess, social media with people saying, hey, you already did that back on that record. He's like, oh, fuck, I can't win here, right?
Oh, it's like a double-edged sword, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's cool that they are following you so closely that they can tell those details, but at the same time, it's like, lay the fuck off, it's just a job, all right? I'm trying to earn a living over here.
sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but of course the staff
fucked
is
up.
Not. Yeah.
Yeah,
John.
I see.
Dude.
This guy.
What's up with the video? Dude, you got a fucking frog in your throat or what? Or is that pimples? Oh!
That's funny.
I thought it was funny. What about you, Genghis?
No, I got a laugh.
Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, you guys are a couple fucking jokers, aren't you? Couple clowns you are.
Oh, don't even start with the good fella shit again.
He's already doing the fucking... He's got attitude.
Of course I've got an attitude.
What, he had a mite all or something?
Maybe.
Dude, just start the fucking video.
Can you believe that? He actually fucking... He doesn't use aspirin. He takes fucking Midol when he has a headache.
Oh, that does. Booyah!
Didn't work, dickhead.
Booyah.
Again?
Booyah.
There it is, this guy.
Thank you.
And who might this be? I mean, for the audience out there.
Yeah, we got a little Hammerfall going on tonight.
I got to say, I don't know. We need to look up where this fucking video was done. This venue is fucking spectacular, dude.
Oh, dude, it's shot well. We got the Blu-ray working tonight.
What's the name of the official name here?
The Gates of Dalhalla.
Nice.
Where the fuck's Dalhalla?
I don't know. Let's fucking find out. It is in the wilds of the north.
Yes.
Hey, guys, you need some help?
I doubt you know where Dalhalla.
Dalhalla is a volcano, dickhead.
Dalhalla, not Valhalla. And you're not right. Valhalla is not a volcano.
Perfect.
Dude, just count fucking line. Read a history book every once in a while, you prick.
See, Dalhalla is actually an amphitheater located in a former limestone quarry and is used as a summer music venue, which I guess is why some of these dudes are in shorts and stuff. But it is located 7 kilometers north of Lake Siljan and the town of Radvik in central Sweden.
That's Mississippi, correct?
No. No. It's in Sweden.
Sweden.
That's called Europe, bro.
Oh, dude, what the fuck is up with him tonight?
He's just crazy.
Can you hit the button?
Yeah.
Silence his ass.
Done.
Look at him. He's fucking scurrying around. Temples, well, he always looks confused.
This is nice camera work, too. What's interesting is the venue is so big. It doesn't seem that way from some of the shots. But look at that. Look how big that is. And then look how big the stage is. I mean, you could fit like another couple of fucking things on that stage. Another couple of dudes playing around.
Well, it's kind of interesting because the show starts in the daylight and it's starting to kind of get darker.
Oh, as the show goes on? That's pretty cool. Yeah, I see it is kind of starting to darken up a bit.
It is kind of funny. I was telling Genghis, I've seen this thing before. We've never watched it together, but at the beginning of the video, the crowd's just like, I think we're just going to sit here and just kind of chill.
Yeah, they're like just way mellow. It's like, you know this is a metal concert, right, guys?
It's like, get up your fucking ass.
It's like, I thought this was somebody else. I thought this was ABBA.
No shit. But now, I guess as the show goes on, and I guess they're playing more of their older classic hits, the fans get into it a bit more. But it's a pretty good-sized venue, and there's a lot of empty seats, which is kind of embarrassing, too.
I like the fucking... The wall of Marshalls looks badass.
Oh, yeah, dude.
They got a shitload of amps out there.
I would be going nuts out there right now.
Oh, dude, wouldn't you love this? If you did, like, one of your annual trips to Europe and you went up there while this was going down?
Oh, forget about it.
You'd be fucking loving it, dude.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, for the band, they probably spent a ton of money filming this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, pan out to the crowd, just show how crazy you're getting. And they're like...
They have to use special effects.
They're all CG.
You see, like, cheap CG shit. Where you're like, I recognize that crowd from, like, a video game I played.
It's like one of those things on ESPN where, like, the guys are talking about football and then they have the fake crowd in the background.
Or, like, those things where they do the, on some channels, like in Europe, I think it's even in Asia, they do it a lot, where when they're talking about a story about some guy murdered a guy or something, they do the story, they have, like, a computer-generated reenactment of the crime, and it's just so fucking blocky characters. It's the worst computer animation ever. And dude, it's like that. They're all just like...
Did you hear about... I saw a story in the news today.
Yeah?
Where
you read the news today?
I read the news today. Oh, Lord.
He almost nodded off.
Oh, yeah, I did. No, this dude went fucking crazy in the hospital.
Oh, no
he
shit?
He picked up, like, this pipe and just started going after the nurse and started fucking beating them.
Holy crap.
And this is the most fucked up part about it, right? The dude was, I think, 68 years old.
Uh-huh.
And went crazy, started beating people. They finally get him down. He's catatonic, and then he dies.
Holy shit.
That's like something out of a horror flick.
Exactly. Well, it's made me think of My Bloody Valentine or something.
I'm
remember
thinking,
that?
Did you ever see The Crazies?
No, I always wanted to. Was it
great
good?
Fucking movie, dude.
Where it's great. Just also, it's kind of like a zombie movie, except it's real people. They're not dead. They just kind of go crazy.
It's like Outbreak.
Yeah, like of insanity or something. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Weird, man.
It was a
but
great
it's pretty
flick.
Good, huh?
Yeah, Wifey and I were talking about that today. I was like, dude, we're watching that Saturday.
It's a good Halloween
oh,
flick, probably.
Yeah, so... Hey, I tell you what, let's play. We got the Hammerfall on.
Yeah.
Let's play something. They get a brand new record. Well, sort of new. It's been out for a little while. Called Revolution. And I tell you what, let's play the track over there called Wildfire.
So you're saying good movie. In case people aren't realizing it, you know, we just got back.
Yeah, from the our
we
Halloween.
Just got party. Back from the Eau de Fe.
The Eau de Fe? What's the Eau de Fe?
It's what you oughtn't to do, but you do anyway.
A lot of Mel Brooks references, like
dude. We got because it's classic shit, dude. I can't believe he's still around. Not to go on too far of another tangent.
Yeah, I know.
That dude has been knocking that shit out for fucking decades now.
I know. It's sad. He hadn't done anything in a
yeah,
while.
Yeah, he's getting a little too old. He probably won't be around much longer, to be
I
honest.
I wish he would write a movie or direct or something.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
Know?
It's been a while. Spaceball is probably the last big one, right?
Mm. He did Robin Hood, Men in Tights, but
oh,
he didn't act in that.
We'll pretend
that
didn't happen.
Either.
Yeah, that was pretty lame. I never even saw it. But anyway, getting back to what we were saying is, so we recently came back from Central Texas.
Yes.
Where we had our Halloween show, and we barely made it out of the camper alive, dude.
I kind of feel like we pussied out a little bit.
A little bit, but we got the fuck out when the getting was good.
Yeah, exactly. Hal Pimples made it home. Have you talked to him about
that? I just
that?
Hope he didn't make it home, to be honest. I mean, I sure hope everything went all right with him.
He's
for
here.
Legal reasons.
You
is
seen
he?
Him?
Son of a bitch.
I think he got his leg cut. He's limping a little bit.
Oh, okay.
So
he was chatting it up with old Leatherface.
Fucking, like,
and I couldn't tell. Yeah,
there.
I couldn't tell if that was working out or not working out.
No shit. We may have to talk to Leatherface.
If I see the next time I see or hear about Leatherface and you see him in his overalls and he's got the jock under it. Or no, knowing him would be like on the outside of the overalls,
my God,
the fucking jock.
You imagine if Leatherface
becomes friends and starts fucking interning here. It wouldn't surprise me.
You know what's fucked up, though? You know the story I just told you about the guy that was 68 years old?
Yeah.
You know that's the age of Leatherface.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that wild?
Pimples did mention that to me. He goes, I kind of asked him his age and see, you know, where he's at in his life. And I'm like, wait, you guys have a heart-to-heart?
I know. What are you, John Travolta? Why do you talk like that? No, but who fucking knows? These idiots always manage to chat up the weirdest people, man.
I know. That's fucked up. So, Yeah, we may have to ask him a little bit about that.
But before we do that, I think we should have some beer. I think it's crazy not to have. Shoot here.
Can I say that?
I think you just did.
I got wood.
You're thinking of doing, as we sort of finish off our Halloween harvesty type beers?
You guys are going to see some wood?
No.
I could chop the cinder block with this thing.
Jesus Christ. Just bring out the beer already.
Oh, God. I thought you hit the fucking button.
This guy. I thought I did, but he always finds some way to knock this shit out.
It sucks that he used to be an electrician. That's all I gotta say.
And he knows just enough to fuck us over. That's a little lackluster, but hey, it's all gonna get
dramatic over there.
We're gonna make up for all of it because I hear mostly from you, but I hear it's supposed to be the shit.
This thing is amazing, and we'll drink it, and then I'll kind of tell you what it took to get this fucking thing because it wasn't easy. And for you, the people.
Well, now, I'm looking at an interesting thing here. According to Beer Advocate, they say that for the notes on this beer, which is known as an Imperial Stout, it's 10% ABV, made by St. Arnold Brewing Company. This is the St. Arnold Brewing Company Pumpkinator. This is the one. They usually, it's a yearly thing. They'll usually put the year right on the bottle. This one's a 2014. They say, though, in the notes here, and I don't think this is from the company. This must be from the guys at the site. They say this is the same beer as Divine Reserve Number 9. So if you've already reviewed that beer, please do not review it again here. You risk losing the older review when the listings are merged. So I don't know if that's still the case. This was for the 2011 beer, I think. But makes you wonder. Oh, my God, that smells good. Not to jump ahead. So anyway, suffice it to say, it's one of the pumpkin beers. We got those seasonal beers. And like we talked about in the show, pumpkin beers are really fucking exploded. And there's some, as you could expect, some of them are fucking phenomenal. Some of them are just kind of meh. And then there's some that are just really shitty.
Let me ask you, did you jump into the craze this year at all or no?
I tried a couple. And they're
than
okay.
Usual or?
No, I just mostly for the show. Whenever we had them at the show, I tried them. I don't normally go seeking them out on my own because, to be honest, outside of the show, I don't drink a whole lot of beer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love beer, but I'm not an alcoholic or nothing. It's not like I'm like, I got to have beer all the time. I really don't drink all that much, except when I'm here. And then and this is where it's why I appreciate it a little more because I can really get into the taste of the beer because I'm not just having it all the time because I'm afraid that would probably, dull my senses or something.
Don't sip it.
No, I was just smelling it, a little smell. But let's kick in it so we're not too tempted by it. I mean, like I said, St. Arnold.
Tempted by the fruit of another.
We go with a label, of course. It's our unofficial rating, and it's pretty cool. I mean, most of the St. Arnolds are the same in that it's got simple sort of label, nice simple fonts and everything. They've got our fella right there, St. Arnold, patron saint of beer, who's sitting on the cover there in his little bishop outfit. He's got the brewski out, and he's surrounded in this case by some pumpkins, a little jack-o'-lantern action, and he seems to be holding his hand out like to the stars like, thank you, Lord, for this wonderful beer.
No shit.
So anyway, so let's go ahead and give it the look, see.
Okay.
On the appearance, the old monkey lamp says,
dark as night.
That's some pretty dark shit right there. I'd give that a 3.5 at least.
Yeah, 3.5, yeah. Totally.
So a little aroma action?
A little bit of.
Oh, yeah, you're right. On appearance, we haven't talked about the lacing. It's kind of sudsy, a little watery there. Doesn't have a thick hold or anything.
Mm-mm.
But looks healthy. Let's give it a little aroma.
Oh, wow, that smells good.
That's nice.
It smells like pumpkin bread.
Yeah, it's nice. It's got a nice, little bready kind of a smell to it. It's got a little yeasty. It's got a nice mix of spices. Some nutmeg, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
It's nice. Let's go ahead and let's give that a 3.5.
Yeah, 3.5.
3.5 so far, all the way. Let's go for it. Oh, wow.
It's fucking delicious.
That is good. It's like a piece of pumpkin pie or something.
Pumpkin pie, a little bit of chocolate notes at the
end.
Yeah,
I like the little roastiness to it.
Fucking phenomenal.
For something that's 10 ABV, too, you don't really, it doesn't hit you, the alcohol.
Not at all, no.
Even though you know there's a lot in there. Oh, I forgot to bring I got an infrared thermometer. The ones where you, like, shine it at anything and then it tells you the temperature of it.
Oh, wow.
I should have brought it with me so it could be, like, so we can check the temperature of our beer officially.
Oh, nice.
Because I'm curious. I got it for a song on Amazon, like, $15. They're normally, like, you know, $30-$50. And I thought this would be useful to just kind of check out the brews and see, you know, what kind of temperatures we're having them at, especially as they warm up later and we can really taste the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Be interesting to see the temperature variation there.
Oh, I agree.
But on taste so far, on the mouthfeel, it does taste a little bready. Not in a bad way, not in a cloying way. It's
right.
It just gives it a nice bit of texture, you know. So I'd give that at least a 3.5.
Yeah.
Not too watery. Does really well with, like I said, the alcohol. You can feel it there. As it goes down, there's a little bit of a kind of holding on to you. But it's nothing pungent. It's nothing really too strong that takes the taste out of it. I think as it warms up, more of the flavor will come out. And maybe a little less of that alcohol will be so prominent.
Mm-hmm.
For taste.
I give the taste a 4.
Yeah, that's at least 3.5 or 4.
Oh, dude.
That's
nice. I love this beer. Isn't it awesome?
That's really nice. Oh, yeah. We're going to enjoy this during the show. So, So anyway, what, do you want to kick into a song before we go off into a topic? Or?
Yeah, I was thinking about, I was going to play this band. I've played them before.
Uh-huh.
This is a Swedish, we may have a Swedish motif tonight, right? A Zodiac.
Okay.
They've got a new record out, and I would typically play something off the new record, but I kind of feel bluesy tonight. They did a really cool cover of ZZ Top's Blue Jean Blues.
Oh, no, that's a great song.
Yeah. So this is off A Bit of Devil. This is Zodiac and a little Blue Jeans Blues.
Oh, hey.
Phenomenal.
I dig the new stuff.
Dude, I love the Zodiac. I really dig these guys, and I kind of feel like I've done them injustice, Holmes.
Why, Holmes? Why'd you screw them?
Dude, I need to get the word out. These guys rock. They're really good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's some really good new music coming out. I know at first I was reluctant. I wasn't into that retro, the so-called retro sound.
Yeah.
And to be fair, the retro sound has been going on for like a few years now. Mm-hmm. But I'm really kind of into it now. And there's a lot of good bands out there that are still doing stuff.
Do you like Black Pussy?
Hey, who doesn't, man?
Same with a band. I tell you what, you want to play some Black Pussy?
I'm just too childish to
you
not
play
laugh
with,
at that.
You want to play with some Black Pussy?
I want to be all up in some Black Pussy.
I tell you what, here's some Black Pussy.
Yeah.
Now that you've been knee-deep in black pussy, we can move on with the topic. You'll just get it together, man.
Shit.
That really is a trippy. I love that somebody decided at some point they had an old limestone quarry mm-hmm. in Sweden and said, out there in the lake where the water is, let's build a giant stage.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to have power and all that going to it. So they had to have built all that shit in mind. And then around the rest of the quarry, let's build in some seats. We'll just make this a big fucking concert venue. How awesome is that?
Well, I mean,
that puts to shame our place.
That Red Rock in Colorado.
That's a pretty famous, pretty badass place too. You'd think that would be horrible acoustics.
Yeah, you would think.
And yet people just totally get off on.
Well, it's like a cavern there. You know, you're in the middle of a little cavern.
Yeah, in this case, yeah. I don't know how Red Rock is. Maybe it's the same thing.
Yeah.
I did see one where it was like some concerts on PBS or flipping channels one time. And fucking Yanni was on. And he was playing some concert where he was in, kind of like this, where it's like it's clearly some sort of natural venue. Yeah. And he's playing away. And of course, you remember he was dating Linda Evans from Dynasty?
Oh, really?
He dated her for a long time. And you see him, he's on there, and he's so goofy when he's playing. He had the long hair back then, the big mustache. And he played, and he's always playing like he's just like he's just getting off the whole, like he's got his dick inside the fucking piano the whole time, like a fleshlight. And the fucking camera would cut back to Linda Evans in the audience, I think with her mother. And then she was just like, woo! And just like, what the fuck is this? But it was this weird sort of outdoor, kind of like this.
Oh,
this
wow.
Beautiful outdoor, like amphitheater, like carved out of rock or something.
That's wild.
It was wild. Oh, God help us.
I didn't know you were a fan of Yanni.
Why won't you die? I thought fucking Leatherface did you in.
You guys got a great sense of humor. I got you. Love it. I love it. I love it.
Oh, God. So, did you have something you needed to say to us? Okay, I'm hitting the button. This fucking guy.
I just wanted to say that. Are you a fan of Zapier as well?
No.
See, you would be a fan. I mean, if you like the Yanni, you probably like the Zapier.
Never said I like the Yanni.
And dude, what's up with your fucking voice?
Issue with that Leatherface.
Speaking of Leatherface, what the fuck are you two guys talking about?
You got about an hour?
No, I don't. So we'll talk about it another time.
Yeah. This fucking guy.
Suit yourself.
All right, then.
That was easier than I thought it was going to be.
I don't know what that's about. Anyway, so moving on. You want to maybe start up this topic here?
Yeah, you got a topic over there.
Oh, yeah. Well,
this is fucking phenomenal.
It is some good beer. You're right.
And I will say this. I told Genghis a little story. Let me tell you my story. No, this stuff is this Pumpkinators. It was something that, you said that they brew it yearly now since 2011, right?
Yeah, at least the picture at Ray Beer has 2011 on it. This one's 2014, so.
So they've been brewing it for 3 years, and I've never heard about it until this year.
Uh-huh.
And apparently, people in Houston go crazy for this shit, and I see why, because this stuff's amazing. But I went on a little bit of a hunt to try to... I stumbled across a bottle, and then I had to go on the hunt to find more.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So I took Genghis to a convenience store tonight that probably has the best craft brew selection of beer in all of Houston.
That shit was
which
crazy.
Is insane.
Yeah.
Why would a convenience store do that?
I have no fucking idea. I don't know what this dude... I mean... You have to figure management's behind it. I mean, he's got a whole section fucking carved out of the store. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't just pull that off unless you've got the blessing of the management. So I don't know if this guy's the owner of the place and he's doing what he wants to, or if this guy just has been given enough free rein by the manager or the owner to just say, yeah, whatever you think is right. And he just decided, somebody in there decided, we need to go craft beer. This craft beer thing's the way to go. Let's start knocking this shit out. So this motherfucker's pulling in some somewhat obscure shit, even shit we haven't seen. And we've been to a lot of stores looking for beer. Yeah. And he's got some really good shit in there. And it's kind of ridiculous how awesome some of that selection is.
It's just blown away. I had to take Genghis in there. Hold on. I think I see... is that a poo from Quickie Mart?
I didn't know he was here.
I didn't either. Hey, Apu, how are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Apu, just real quick, and sorry to bring you up. You look a little nervous.
That's all right. Come again.
Would you ever consider putting that kind of a crap brew section in Quickie Mart?
No, not at all. We cannot put this into the Quickie Mart because it would cost us money to store all of these things.
Oh, good point.
We don't like to spend a lot of money there. I don't know if you'd noticed, but a lot of the things at the Quickie Mart used to be in museums.
Oh, yeah. Well, I saw the glass cases.
Exactly. That's where we got most of
them. Okay, cool, cool. That's I get it now. I understand. Where did this bald guy come from?
I don't know. Who is he? Like the guitar tech snuck on stage and nobody noticed.
He's the oddest one to on stage, all right? Thank you, Apu. Thank you. I'm sorry. We kind of rude. We just ignored him.
Thank you. Come again.
Some bald dude just walked on stage.
Who is this motherfucker?
He stole me guitar, right? Yeah?
He looks like that dude. Who's that one, that midget guy who's in all the...
Mini-me.
The movies? No. That's that other guy.
Oh.
He was in one of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
I know.
That other guy. He usually plays like he's a badass, like a tough guy.
Let's just call him dude. Midget One. That was probably wrong.
So, anyway.
I take offense to that.
You take offense
to that?
Why
would you take offense to that?
I don't know.
My parents were of the small nature.
Get the fuck out of here.
Okay, they're Japanese. They're a little bit African American, a little Mexican. That's probably not proper, is it?
No, it's not. It's Hispanic, dick.
Okay.
So you had Japanese, African American, Hispanic, small people parents.
Correct.
Okay. I can't even. I'm still just trying to process all that bullshit.
How do you get that mix?
Yeah, it's like I don't think it's even worth it to try to figure it out.
You ever heard of the melting pot, asshole?
Dude, what's with the fucking attitude with you tonight?
You're offending me. You both are offensive.
Well, then why don't you fuck off so we don't bother you anymore?
One day I might just do that.
Cool.
Can that day be today?
Any luck on that one?
Fuck off.
I swear. Why can't we fire him?
Hey, I'm happy to do so.
Dude, it's in our contract that we have no power to fire John.
That's fucked up. We're stuck with this asshole the rest of our lives.
I don't know.
He'll outlast us, and it's our fucking show.
I actually think they're making us put Mickey's in our drinks whenever it's contract time. Because you know how she's like, hey, boys, I got you some new beers.
I know. He always comes in with like a hot toddy or some bullshit. I'm like, where does this come from?
Let's celebrate.
But and yeah, before you know it, we're drinking. We're gambling our clothes and shit. It's ridiculous. Playing craps for our shoes.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
But anyway, so let's move on. Our topic tonight,
please,
was to talk about what appears to be the guitar tech's going wild. He's like, I can't believe it. I'll never get another chance like this.
So I had a wig backstage.
I got to play my ass off where they throw me out.
Poor security realizes. I don't think he's part of the band, right?
Drags mom, and he's like, mom, hi, mom.
Shit. Check, please.
Pontus Norgren.
Yeah, you got Pontus Norgren and you got Baldy out there. What am I talking about?
Bitty B. So anyway, I wanted to talk about, it seems to me, and I know that people will say, well, wait a minute, this already happened. This happened back in the 80s the first time. What are you talking about? But it seems to me that even more so than then, that metal has finally, and this is maybe years ago actually, but still going along, has become pretty much mainstream, don't you think?
I think to an extent.
Can you think of a place, for instance, where you've heard metal, whether it was in a movie or a TV show or a news program, whatever, where you hadn't heard it before, where you thought, that's odd, no one's ever really done metal in that context?
Well, I'll tell you something.
Because I bet you can think of some examples.
I've got a great example, and if you listen to episode 180, right, with our interview with Evergrey, I mentioned to Tom England, I said, believe it or not, on the little TV screens at the gym.
Yeah. You can see.
Pardon.
Ragman Burr.
No, at the TV screens at the gym, they have like advertisements for new movies and new music coming up.
Oh, okay.
I saw the album cover for Evergrey's Hymns for the Broken.
Wow. Now
the
that's
Haunted's
a new one.
New record.
Fuck.
And then this week, I saw Lordy Scare Force 1 up on the screen.
Fuck. Is it just... tied into maybe a certain label or something?
No, I don't think so. I don't know. Well, AFM. Hold on, let's think about it for a second. Let's think about it. AFM's got Evergrey, and they've got Lordy.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know what label. I think the Haunted's on Century Media.
Ah, okay.
And the cover's cool. I mean, you're just looking up and you're like, holy shit. Like, I was working out a couple days ago. I was like, is that Scare Force 1? Really?
Wow.
That's pretty fucking cool.
That is way cool.
So, I mean, as far as that being mainstream, I don't know. But, I mean, what? Who else but me? I'm the dickhead that goes to the gym that's wearing fucking concert shirts
right. All
the time. I mean, just older shirts from shows or maybe stuff that I got from like Century Media or something like that with like an album type thing.
Right.
Yeah, because some of these albums you'll get free T-shirts on Century Media. So I'll wear those shirts to the gym. I mean, who cares? I mean, they're knockoffs, whatever.
Plus, it's cool. I mean, you gotta spread the word, man.
Yeah, so I'm wearing Cradle of Filth. I'm wearing The Haunted. I'm wearing, you know, all these, like, Insomnium. You got problems over there, don't you? Insomnium and bands like that to the gym. People are probably like, what the fuck's this guy? This guy's problem.
Who the fuck's he think he is?
No, but seriously.
Like, let's kick his ass. Yeah, and then you leave right about that time.
No, shit. No, but I just thought it was really weird. And I think Tom was kind of like, well, that's pretty fucking cool. And that's why I said, do you think that you guys are going to get more coverage in the U.S. if I'm seeing your album cover being advertised in the fucking gym
right. Of
all places?
Well, that's kind of the thing that if you think about it, years ago, maybe when we say like the metal, that metal resurgence we've been enjoying this kind of renaissance of metal for the last several years, actually. But when it started, maybe it was around the start of the 21st century, right after 2000 or so.
Yeah.
When it kicked back in after having been dormant for 10, 15 years at least.
The 90s.
Yeah. So about, you know, some 15, 20 years later, it seemed to come back. And one of the things that I noticed as sort of a benchmark, the way to test this is the hardest, it's, you know, the European bands, people that you were into because you used to get a lot of imports.
Right.
So you knew about a lot of European bands that I know that regular mainstream metal guys in America just hadn't heard of necessarily. Doesn't mean they were completely unheard of, but, you know, like Talisman, I wouldn't have known about fucking Talisman if it weren't through you. It's not like they're all over the radio or something.
Right.
Now, they're what, Canadian or something? Or
No, it's...
Or they're European.
Jeff Scott Soto.
Right.
American citizen.
American guy, right.
Marcel Jacob. I'm trying to think. I think he might be
German
Swedish.
Or something? Oh, Swedish. Okay.
Swedish. He was on, I think he was on one of the first Yngwie records. I'm pretty sure
he was on
the very
Swedish.
First Rising Force record.
Okay.
The other guys, Pontus Norgren was in the band. He's Swedish.
Right.
Swedish.
So you know what I'm saying? If it weren't for stuff like... And that was a relatively more well-known American band than certainly Pontus Norgren on his own or, you know, those other guys. So my point is, even that was a little bit obscure.
Right.
But now it's like, you know, it's pretty easy. And maybe the internet is what the big difference is. We didn't have the benefit of the internet back then. And if it wasn't on MTV or the local radio, your chances of knowing about any of these bands are pretty slim. Unless you were like a fucking traveler, a regular traveler that every year just went to Europe to check out the music. But you know what I'm saying? A lot of that music would stay in Europe where metal was really just fucking flourishing like
thriving.
A motherfucker.
Yeah.
So the fact that now it's so accessible now and it's easy to know about some new, you know, freaking Czechoslovakian band or something, or I was just jammed to a couple of Italian bands today.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Who's your... Real quick, just throw you something. Yeah. Who's your favorite Italian metal band?
That's a hard one to say. Maybe DGM?
DGM?
Yeah.
You want to play some DGM?
Fuck yeah.
Still.
approach to deal with what was unfair.
Yeah, fucking Mulroney is badass. He's such a killer fucking guitarist. And as I understand it, he's almost as good a fucking keyboardist as he is a guitarist. So he's kind of like another Tony McAlpine type.
Like McAlpine.
Yeah.
Well, you know, another great Italian band, one of the first ones I remember being into was probably Labyrinth.
Oh, nice. Yeah, fucking yeah, they were badass.
Labyrinth. You want to play some classic Labyrinth?
Fuck yeah.
Let's do it.
Some Labyrinth. I also dug, I think it was called House of Saints or somebody. They were like, they kind of, to me, sounded a lot like a Queensryche ripoff band. Like classic Queensryche ripoff band.
House of Saints.
Not that they were ripping them off. They were badass. They had did like
House
a couple
of
albums. House of Spirits. Maybe that's who I'm thinking of.
House of Spirits.
They were
yeah.
an Italian band that had a real Queensryche sound.
Yeah, I think they were pretty.
I mean, I haven't heard from them in so long that maybe I'm just not remembering them very well. But I think, yeah, House of Spirits makes sense. So, like I said, now there's been a resurgence where I hear Italy's got a lot of kick-ass metal bands.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and, I mean, Lacuna Coil.
Yep, and DGM is probably one of my favorites because they really, that one last album they did that had, like, Russell Allen singing on a track, And they did some videos that you can find on YouTube that are fucking fantastic. I mean, they're just such a, there's so much fucking energy in these bands.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
It's like we just fucking discovered metal or something.
Yeah.
They're making it like it's brand new, and they make it sound fantastic. And so my point is they're so much more accessible now than they ever were back when metal made its first real push into the mainstream in the 80s and 90s.
It's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of interesting. It's hard to say because there was that surge in the mid-80s where metal was in a lot of movies and stuff like that.
That's true.
Now, you don't hear about it as much, but, you know, talking to Steve Blaze, I hope he got that casket.
I hope so, too.
Because Lillian Axe is going to be in Constantine.
Yeah, I heard about that.
So, and then you got the crossover Rob Zombie, we've talked about it many times, where he puts, I think, he didn't really put his own music in his movies so much, I don't believe.
No, I don't suppose so.
but Lordy, he had the whole band Lordy in his movie.
And Lordy, you know, they're making movies. I mean, I guess maybe part of what I'm thinking of when I say more mainstream is that they're getting into more other sorts of, what do you call it, entertainment sort of genres.
Yeah.
Like they're getting more into movies and getting more, it's a lot more crossover.
Right.
Whereas, you know, a lot of bands would just be, I'm in a band and they're in that band, like Black Sabbath, like forever, and they just kept making albums until they just got so old they just retired or died or whatever. And now it's like, no, we do this, and then on the side we're making fucking movies, and this guy's doing a comic book, you know, and this
yeah.
guy over here is fucking, he's an artist as well, like the guy who does for Baroness, that guy is a fucking illustrator who does
yeah,
a shitload of album covers,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
And he's really good. He's got this cool kind of Art Nouveau style going on. The guitar tech showing off, dude.
Yeah.
He's like, I really can play, I promise.
He's air guitaring holes.
No shit. The fucking, all of a sudden it goes, doot, doot, the, starts the CD skipping, and you see him like, big glob of sweat. trying to fake it.
Exactly.
No, but you know what I mean? So there's a lot of dudes doing a lot more shit now, and I guess it, maybe that's part of what makes them seem more mainstream. It's not necessarily the band, it's people within the band doing other gigs on the side that aren't necessarily musical.
And there's a lot of that going on
yeah.
that wasn't going on back in the day because these
right.
guys had the support of record companies and they were making a lot more money and they didn't need
and they were just like, yeah, look, Monkey, you're supposed to just dance, go out and dance
yeah.
and don't worry about anything else.
But
these guys can do a lot of other shit.
I think some of these guys are making decent bread, but they just want to do other stuff when they're on their time off.
And see, I think in part that technology has made it possible to do that.
Right.
You can do stuff that normally meant like, oh, if I'm going to work with this guy and I get in a plane and fucking fly over there to his house and do shit. Now it's like fucking internet shit back and forth, man. And so you can do things like write a novel or write a fucking fucking play or make a small independent movie and shit
right.
on the side because you want to. And
mm-hmm.
I think that's badass. I mean, that's cool. But I guess that's what I'm getting at is, I mean, you see all these young celebrities are in their 20s. Who weren't even fucking alive. They weren't an itch in their daddy's pants when these fucking, when a lot of these bands were really making a name, household name out of metal.
Right.
And you see them, they go anywhere to take their picture, they're all flashing the horns, man. And I'm like, look.
Well, I think that's because of us, actually.
I mean, I guess it's become a cultural thing. It's
oh,
not
yeah.
just a metal thing. I don't think that any of those guys are
it's
all
not,
like, I'm
so cool
into metal.
This is a cool thing to do, Rod.
Right. And something tells them, oh, this is cool. I'll be cooler if I do this. It's like, so metal has kind of become synonymous with that thing, and that's pretty slick.
Hey, guys.
Yeah?
Kind of wonder where that came from, don't you?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean,
yeah,
why would all these, yeah, why would all these celebrities just all of a sudden be doing it?
Do
you have a cough or a cold or something? I don't know, allergy season's up.
We see where this is going.
You know what I'm trying to say? Before I was so rudely interrupted, as usual.
Dude, I didn't interrupt you. You're fucking clearing your throat.
I'm trying to make a statement by doing that.
I see. Make your statement for pizzas.
When I was spent some time down in the wood.
Uh-huh.
The wood. Where the fuck's that?
Hollywood, dumbass.
Please continue.
I taught a class. I taught a class of celebrities. And I showed them how to do their little gay sign. And unbeknownst to me, it took off. It went crazy, it went viral. Is that what they say? viral?
Yeah, I would. I think viral when I look at you.
What is wrong with you two?
I know. Do you need a fucking cough drop, you silly bastard?
No. This guy, it makes me choke up with your stupidity.
Right.
It ignorance, because I am a cult hero in Hollywood.
I see.
Yes, yeah. Thanks, John. Thanks for showing all the celebrities how to do that.
You're welcome.
Okay. You just thinking?
Yeah, no shit. Done. So yeah. Go away.
What the fuck, man?
I don't know, dude. It's shit popping. He's like,
threw something at me.
I think so.
Fuck you, you cocksucker.
So anyway, okay. I guess we should probably start wrapping this up.
Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, I think to be honest. Even though certain folks on our staff think that they started this trend, I don't believe so. I think it's just somehow, somewhere, someone did it, maybe by mistake, or they were doing hook'em horns,
which and then is, they yeah, uncannily similar.
Dude, when we first got our shirts, the infamous Retro Rock shirts,
yeah,
I had people tapping me on the shoulder, dude, horns up, horns up. I'm like, Texas Longhorns, up. I'm like, no, heavy metal, brother.
It's like, I didn't know the Longhorns were metal. You're like, look, yeah, dude, just go
on. No, that's not even discussed. I was like, it's like having a conversation with John and Pebbles.
No, shit. You just want to carry those little smoke bombs like the ninjas have, so somebody just, poof, and then disappear.
Yeah.
No, get the fuck out. No, so anyway, I mean, all I was saying is, I guess, I think what we've concluded really is metal is certainly big, like it was back in the 80s. But right. But maybe part of why it seems bigger is because the internet has helped spread it a lot farther than it could have spread in the 80s.
And I agree 100%.
Yeah, I think it seems bigger, it's because of the internet.
It's the different types of media out there, outlets out there, internet.
That just didn't exist at the time.
Promotional shit at the gym.
And they probably, even with the internet, they probably wouldn't be as big as they are if you hadn't already had before the sort of proven formula that sort of that first wave of heavy metal.
And I think another thing, too, and I wish I would ask Steve Blaze this, but, you know, I wanted to ask him, how did you get this NBC gig? You know, was this guy a Lillian Axe fan? I almost wonder if some of these guys were fans that are in high positions in these production companies. Dude, when I was a kid, I fucking saw Lillian Axe. Dude, they were fucking awesome.
That's a good point. Yeah, yeah, yeah. People that fell in love with that the first time in the 80s. Now they're the ones, yeah, who can promote new metal shit because they know where it's come from, made them lifelong fans, and they're all too happy to kind of, second wave's coming through, fuck yeah, let's punch it through, man, why not? That's a good point, and I think you're right, and like I said, with the internet behind them, to be able to distribute shit instantly worldwide, I mean, fuck. There's no, every corner of the globe should know about metal if you want to push it like that.
And the interview we have tonight for you is with a brand new band called The Raskins.
Mm-hmm.
And The Raskins, I mean, on their brand new record, debut record, these guys were doing, as you'll find out in the interview, doing soundtrack, TV work, musical.
Oh, okay.
And then decided to put a band together and see what happened. But they've done 4 or 5 videos for their first record.
Damn.
And what Logan told me was, hey, it's cheap. And it's a great way to get your music out there.
Fuck yeah. Especially, YouTube and stuff. This is what I mean by the internet being this medium that allows you to say, here's my product. Not just the music, which was only one kind of product, just sound, you know, music stuff. Now it's like it's video. It's fucking, you could make your own t-shirts, you know, sell them on the web and fucking so that some kid in China can be walking around with your fucking metal band that you started a week ago with a fucking shirt on, man, listening to your music that they downloaded.
True.
And it's like, holy fuck. So it's pretty sweet. But anyway, maybe that's another topic we'll revisit in another show, like maybe, let's see, episode 700. let's target episode 700.
Yeah, enough time would have passed, right? So... anyway, I think we've exhausted that topic, so let's get to our classics.
Let's do it.
I think I'm going to have to go with something I was playing you a little bit earlier tonight. Okay. A little bit of Saints and Sinners.
Nice.
Fucking Canadian band, forget about it. These guys...
Fucking Canadians.
Damn Canadians. Had they made it, or had they come out probably 3 or 4 years earlier, they would have been a household name, I think, by the type of music they were doing. It was kind of a heavier, extreme, funky type thing.
Uh-huh.
But mixed with, you know, just solid classic hard rock. What the, excuse me, what the fuck is going on in the corner over there? Some people like, I'm getting me ring of fire here. And I'm not, and swirl it around.
It's like some sort of Cirque du Soleil shit going on. Juggling,
what the fuck?
Juggling flames and shit.
It's like,
we're trying to do a show, do you mind?
It's the ballad, right? And the homeboy, the fucking tall motherfucker, he's back there, he's like, I'm going to play me guitar like I got a little keyboard down here. I mean, little Casio, but it's me Strat.
Nobody makes sense anymore.
Yeah, I don't get what's going on. Sorry. Now, here it goes. Do you see how, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's weird.
But should I watch the band or this lady twirling the fire, right?
No shit. Until she fucking drops it and catches herself on fire.
She's like, I'm okay. The water's right here, right? So anyway, Saints and Sinners. I think if they come out, I think they came out in 90 or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Had they come out in like 87, 88.
Right.
Huge. I think they would have, you know, made a little bit of a little stop here in the U.S. Forget about it.
Sweet.
But they toured, and unfortunately, they didn't come to Houston. They came to Dallas.
Lame.
But I got to hear it on Z-Rock for free.
Rock
you. So what are you
going
to do? let's play a little bit of Walk That Walk.
Gonna do with your treasure chest, then your eyes are blue, you're a satin doll. Who you gonna call with your boom boom? I'm ready to fall. Tell the truth, what you gonna do? Turn me upside down, shoot dirty poop. You're a movie queen, I'm on my team. With your boom boom boom, I'm ready to scream. Hit me like lightning, the best star.
Well, my classic, I don't know why, but I've just been on a fucking Dream Theater tear lately, just listening to a shitload of stuff. Because I like it.
You said you didn't know why.
Well, then why did you ask why, smartass?
Because I figured I'd catch it up fucking live.
So anyway, I listened to a lot of good shit. Albums I'd even forgotten that were so fucking
old
great.
DT, yeah.
But I went back all the way to, oh shit, I forgot the fucking name of it. The third album, right after Images and Words.
That was Awakening.
Thanks.
I wake up, motherfucker.
You fucking asshole. Look, it's Scarred by Dream Theater off the album Awake.
Thank you.
So you gotta fucking, so before this asshole opens his mouth again, you want to throw
Dude,
a song out?
He has been. It's probably the surliest he's ever been.
No shit. He needs to change his tampon or something. It's making him fucking toxic.
There's fucking problems over that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So for my pick of the week, that's fucking crazy ass show. anyway, so my pick of the week, I'm going to go with a band over here. And it's not my typical kind of pick. They're kind of different, kind of new, little bar, little blue. No, actually, I played this for you a little bit ago. It's a band called Temperance. It's like Stradivarius, but with a chick singer.
A little bit of a Within Temptation kind of sound
with,
to them.
Within
Temptation. A little symphonic metal kind of deal.
Yeah, yeah. But it's got a really cool kind of vibe to it. It starts off kind of heavy, and then goes into this kind of heavy melody thing, slow. And then really kind of takes off and turns into a pretty cool tune.
Nice.
So here's a little bit of Temperance.
Digging on this new band. I recently reviewed them. They're another, when we were talking about Sweden, and how these guys are really kicking out a bunch of really cool shit these days. There's a band called Hell in the Club.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, they're pretty trippy. They're kind of neat. They're made out of guys from different bands that are mostly kind of that fantasy metal, you know, or almost kind of Renaissance elf metal and shit,
like Hollywood metal.
Yeah, but they're guys made up from bands of Elven King, Secret Sphere, Death SS.
Secret Sphere is pretty cool.
Yeah, so these guys get together and they just went for an old the description for them is they mix classic hard rock and modern sounds, heavy metal and party songs, 50s rock and roll, and anything in between. I know you're like, that's a weird combination.
Yeah, totally.
But when you listen to them, it's basically classic, old school Guns N' Roses / Poison.
Kind
of classic Whiskey A Go-Go on a fucking Sunday night on the, or Saturday night on the fucking strip. Yeah, they sound fucking fantastic. And
oh, nice.
You'll dig this one. This one here is Beware of the Candyman.
Okay, let's do it.
Fill the box and dreams. I'm in the middle of the night.
Yeah, Hell in the Club off that album, Devil on My Shoulder. Those guys, it was pretty sweet. They're Swedish.
Swedish. We had a total Swedish vibe tonight.
They said, we're going to play the music.
Sweden. We're fucking pissing them off like these cocksuckers.
It's not Sweden.
We don't
it's
sound like
Sweden.
That. I know you bastards.
It was like, Sweden.
But anyway, so let's wrap this rascal up over
wrap
here.
Wrap this motherfucker. This has been kind of a painful show.
Tell you what.
Watch me bend over. So anyway, thank you for listening as always. We hope you guys are still digging our shows. Because we're going to give you more. Even if you don't like it, fuck it. You're going to get more.
Too fucking bad.
Yeah. Go fuck yourself. If you don't like it, go fuck yourself. That's all I got
to
say.
Who are you to fucking tell us?
Yeah, because anybody who listens likes us. The three people out there.
That's right.
So, no, anyway, we appreciate everybody that checks us out. And we hope you dig the interview with the Raskins. Cool dude. Logan's cool as shit. And I hope you dig the interview. They're a cool new band. Check them out. After you hear the music, you're going to say, I'm sold already.
Where do I find?
So anyway, big things coming next show. We're gonna have a appearance by Mayor McCheese,
nice.
And his latest legal win, which
still
appalls the shit out of me. I don't get it, but you'll find out what we're talking about in the next show. So we want to give you two big horns up.
Hey guys, this is Logan Raskin of the Raskins, and you're listening to Genghis and the Ragman. Horns up! Logan Raskin from the Raskins. Give it up, people. How's it going, Logan?
Good. How you guys doing, man?
Good, man. It's awesome to talk to you, man. A lot of buzz around you guys right now. You're on your debut record, and you've already toured with Motley and Alice Cooper. First off, I got to ask you, how the hell did you score that tour? Because you're doing something right.
You know, I got to tell you, it's really just been an incredible, magical year for the Raskins. You know, I mean, the year started off with us doing our own touring. You know, we started off in late January. The Raskins were, you know, we were playing small venues throughout the U.S., just kind of trying to get a little momentum built up before the release of our album in late spring. And then, you know, we got the opportunity. We got called by Scott Weiland to go out with Scott for about a month. We did a month's worth of shows with Scott Weiland. So it was like slowly we went from playing like 300-seat and 500-seat venues on our own to playing in front of 2,500-seat venues with Scott Weiland. And that tour in itself was just really incredible for the Raskins and very successful. And then right at the end of that tour, you know, our agents started talking about ideas, you know, like saying, look, guys, what are we going to do? What kind of touring are we going to put together for the summer to really catapult the, you know, to promote the release of this debut record of yours? And we started swapping around ideas. And, you know, a lot of bands got thrown out there. A lot of different tours got thrown out there. And I was just like, well, you know, guys, there's some major tours going out this summer. I was like, you know, do we have any shot at maybe getting on with, like, Slash or Aerosmith or Def Leppard or Kiss? And I was like, well, what about Motley Crue and Alice Cooper? And they're like, all right, well, you know, sounds good, Logan. We'll submit for it and we'll see what happens. You know, me being the cockeyed optimist that I am, you know, my dad always taught me, you know, if you shoot for the stars, you know, sometimes you might, you know, hit a treetop, you know. That's kind of our mantra here with the Raskins. But, you know, sure enough, we got contacted back by, you know, the Motley Crue's booking agent, and they showed a lot of interest, and they said basically, look, we're interested, but we have to bring it to the guys in the band. And if they say okay to it, we'll do it, you know. So it took a couple of weeks, you know, and they said, you know, it's very difficult getting all four of those guys into one room at once. And finally they did, you know, they looked at our stuff, and they really loved what we were doing. They loved our style. They loved our sound. And basically they said, yeah, we'd love to have these guys come out. So I originally thought, we were told it was going to be like around 15 to 17 shows. And it ended up being 66 shows. They're like, you know what, let's have you guys come out and do 66 shows with us. So, yeah, there you go. I mean, I got the call from the agent, and they were basically like, you know, I hope you guys are ready. You're about ready to go on tour with Alice Cooper and Motley Crue, you know. So, yeah, we did our first show July 2nd in Grand Rapids, Michigan, at the Vandell Arena. And we did, funny enough, we did a couple of warm-up shows with that band, Saving Abel. So we did about a half a dozen shows with them.
Oh, nice.
Which were great. I mean, great shows. You know, we played the Machine Shop in Michigan, and we did some really cool shows. And, yeah, I mean, we went from playing in front of 800,000 people to 18,000 people. And that first show was a sold-out show, and... yeah, I stood up on Alice Cooper's riser, threw my hands in the air in front of 18,000 people and said, we've arrived, man. You know, the dream has become a reality, and there you go. And, you know, we're into the second leg of the tour right now, and what an incredible journey and ride it's been for the Raskins thus far.
Dude, that's got to be surreal, going from, like you said, clubs to playing in these big arenas and theaters at, like, 18,000 people. Man, that is awesome, and congratulations. Man, you guys have gotten the breaks that other guys wait, you know, 10, 15 years to get. So that's awesome.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. And like you said, it is very surreal. And, you know, but one thing that I do, you know, want people to know is, like, you know, obviously things happen and have happened very fast for the Raskins. I mean, 2014 has been a whirlwind for us. And, you know, our fan base has grown tremendously. You know, the album is doing really well. The second single is doing tremendously well. And, you know, a lot of that is attributed to this major tour we're on. But, I mean, you know, people, and what I try to explain to everybody is that the Raskins, you know, it's been a long journey for us. You know, it's not just something. We aren't, it seems like we are an overnight success. But there's been many years before that of grinding and struggling and playing the club scene and pushing forward and pushing forward. And, of course, you know, music is something that we love to do, and all the guys in my band love to do it. So we've loved the journey and thoroughly enjoyed the process. But it's been anything but easy for us. And to us, it's been anything but an overnight success, even though it might seem that to everyone. But, you know, like you said, and like I said, you know, 2014 really just seems like everything is finally coming to place for us. And, you know, we're firing on all cylinders. Seems like all the fans really seem to be digging what it is that we're doing. They get what it is that we're doing. And, you know, things couldn't be better for us right now.
Well, that's awesome, too. And, you know, the interesting thing is, I mean, you guys, your brother's your twin. And, you know, looking at the promo photos, like, that looks like the same dude. Is that some sort of trick photography? And then you get to know the band a little bit. And, man, what's it like? And first off, you know, how long have you and your brother had this band together? I mean, I'm sure you guys have kind of played your whole life, or, you know, once you've figured out who's going to do what. But how long have you guys been together, and how long have you been kind of hitting it before you guys kind of got your first record out here?
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, Roger and I have been playing together. You know, we've been playing music together, obviously, our whole life. I mean, we come from a very musical family. You know, my dad was heavily into Broadway theater, and my mom was a big jazz singer. So, I mean, growing up in that household, we were always around music, the two of us, and we were always writing and composing music together. But, I mean, funny enough, you know, the Raskins, this project is the first band that we were actually ever in together. I mean, we've done a lot of stuff separately, and, you know, the Raskins, this project actually started off as a writing project. We were composing music for TV and film for for quite a few years, and basically just receiving a tremendous amount of email, not only in the U.S., but from all over the world, from fans asking, you know, where can we buy the record? Where can we see you guys play live? And it just was basically just a matter of time, you know, before we both knew that we just had to put this band up on its feet and really make it a physical thing. And that's what we did. You know, we decided to do it and go for it, and we took about a year to write the music and record the music, and you know, we put together a 12-song album on our own, which we did on our own. And you know, the band's been together now for a few years, and I mean, it's just like, you know, 2014 really seemed to be the year that things started to come together for us. But it seems like, you know, since Roger and I decided to do this together, and we had that solid foundation with each other, and to have that, you know, the brothers there, and to kind of build the band around that concept, it seemed we finally started to have the success that we weren't having in the past, or I wasn't having in the past with my other bands. And for whatever reason it is, I mean, maybe it's the concept of the two brothers. Maybe it's just the relationship that my brother and I have, having that solid foundation there, knowing that we can trust each other, and, you know, we're not quitting on each other. We'll always have each other there. And it just seems like we kind of just built this band off of that philosophy, and having that solid foundation is definitely the core and one of the main reasons as to why we're having the success that we're having thus far.
Well, for the average guy that's, you know, going to Motley Crue and Alice Cooper, and they get there early and they say, "Who the hell are the Raskins?" How would you describe your sound to just the guy that doesn't know who you are yet?
Yeah. I mean, it's a great question, and I'm going to kind of answer it in two different parts. I mean, basically, the album that we decided we were going to put out as a debut album, we wanted it to have kind of a mixture of influences on there. I mean, at the end of the day, we're a rock band, and I can kind of get into some of the influences that we have, but on this album, on this debut album, I wanted people to know that we're not just a straightforward rock band. There's a lot more dynamic. There's a lot more depth to us as a band, to us as composers, music composers, and songwriters. You know, I mean, growing up in New York City and having the influences from my parents at an early age, starting from like Nat King Cole and Sarah Vaughan and Frank Sinatra. And then when we got older, my brother and I, we started venturing into the club scene in Lower East Side, Manhattan. And, you know, on any given night, you could see bands like, you know, the Stooges play with Iggy Pop, or the Ramones, or the New York Dolls, or Blondie, Deborah Harry, the Talking Heads, and, you know, the Velvet Underground. So it's like, you know, we slowly started getting into those style, Patti Smith, you know, those styles of music and rock and roll. And then, of course, there were artists that we would see all the time playing, like on the Bitter End, on the west side of New York City, like Simon and Garfunkel. I mean, they would play the clubs down there all the time, or Steely Dan. We'd always see Steely Dan playing down there, and Richie Havens. So those are huge influences for us, and we wanted to try to encapsulate that into one album, and I think that we have done that. And actually, the beauty of being able to do a record on your own is you're allowed to do that. You're allowed to have that creative freedom, and we wanted people to kind of see that writing, you know, the depth of our influences and our, you know, the depth of our writing style, and I believe that we accomplished that with this first record. But when you come see the band live, I mean, we're a full throttle, pedal to the metal rock band, and I think that maybe because this Motley Crue Alice Cooper tour has really fueled that on. You know, we love to put on a rock show. You know, my guys, they go 110%. We go hard. We have a great time on stage. We really put on a good rock show, and we really want the fans to know and feel like they're getting their money's worth every time they see the Raskins play. So it's like you listen to the album, and you're like, wow, these guys got a lot of really good music, and there's a lot of depth to these guys. And then you come see us play, and you're like, holy hell, man, these guys really throw down hard on stage, and they're like an incredible rock band, and they really go for it, you know? So it's like, it's funny, people come to the rock show, and then when they buy the album, they're pleasantly surprised at what they hear on the album. And then people, when they buy the album, when they see us in the rock show, they never expect us to be like that live. So, you know, it's kind of interesting, but we're having a great time doing what we do. We love to perform, and we love to record. So hopefully there's going to be a nice long future up ahead for the Raskins. And we're actually, this December, we're going to start recording the second album, because 2015 is really going to be a very busy year in regards to touring and all that stuff. So we want to get a jump start on the recording process for the second album.
Oh, nice, man. Nice. And I was going to say, sound-wise, you guys have a good blend of, like, some classic elements, kind of like the Ramones and Cheap Trick and bands
sure.
like that. And I actually, I don't know, you may think I'm nuts, but I kind of, not in your vocal, but maybe in the music, a little bit of Billy Idol even with kind of a little bit of an alternative vibe. So you got a kind of a hard rock with a little bit of punk with a little bit of alternative all mixed in.
Well, very influenced by the alternative movement, you know, when it came around in the early 90s. There's no question about that. I mean, that was a big moment in time for music just in general. But I loved that time, and I loved all those bands, you know. I mean, granted, I was heavily influenced by, you know, the bands that I was surrounded by in New York City and some of those bands that I had mentioned to you. But when that alternative movement came about and you had all those bands just hit the airwaves from, you know, the whole Seattle scene and all that, and you couldn't avoid it, you know. And, I loved every second of it and definitely was influenced by that as well. So, yeah, of course, you can hear a lot of that style in there. You know, you can hear alternative, you can hear punk, you can hear rock, you can hear folk. And, you know, I'm having a blast trying to incorporate all of that into the Raskins sound. And I think that we accomplished a lot of that on this first record, and I hope to continue with that on the second record.
I think you did. And, I mean, I get a lot of music that comes across my desk, and a lot of it you're like, oh, God, I got to review this. But then I get yours, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is really cool. It's very catchy. The first song, and I cannot get out of my head, and it's been probably 3 weeks. I just cannot get the song out of my head. Lost in the Dark.
Cool.
What, dude, chorus, and, oh, dude, it's a great song. How does a song like that come together, and how's that one coming off live? Is that one of your stronger tracks live?
Strong track live. The fans seem to really love it. It's funny. It's the very first video that we shot. And, you know, Roger and I were talking about ideas for shooting the video. And, like, you know, they want to have, like, this high budget, spend a ton of money on this video. I'm like, you know, we don't have to. He's like, well, what do you mean, Logan? I'm like, look, man, you can have a hot girl, a hot car, and the two of us rocking out. And to me, it's the perfect video. What more do you need, man? And so we just kind of, for the first video, we just went off of that cliche and just that basic concept, and we had a blast shooting it. It came out really well. We actually shot it in Hollywood, California, and it kind of took off online. I mean, it's got, like, you know, almost 2 million views on it, and the fans seemed to really take to it right away, and Yeah, just one of those aggressive, straightforward rock songs, and we had a really good time recording it, and yeah, you know, I mean, like I said, I mean, the fans seem to dig it live. I mean, we definitely mix it up from night to night, you know, on with the Motley Crue tour. You know, we get about a half hour set. I mean, we can be up there 2 hours playing, you know, if we wanted to.
Oh, wow.
So we kind of, yeah, I mean, like, you know, but we mix it up, and it just depends on what we feel like playing from night to night. And, you know, we do approximately 7 songs a night on that tour. And obviously tonight, the beauty about tonight's show is, you know, we'll probably get about an hour, maybe a little bit longer to play. So we can probably get about 10 or 12 songs in. So, I look forward to playing shows like this because obviously we get to play songs that we may not always get to play out on the crew tour, you know. But yeah, you know, it's a great song. It's like I said, it was one of the first ones that we completed, and yeah, it's been a success online as well.
Well, and that's what's kind of neat about you guys. When I do a little additional research, and I did see the video for that tune, and I was like, man, what a classic 80s feel that has.
yeah.
You know, and I was like, man, they must be fans of the 80s as well. But, you know, another cool thing about you guys, and like I said, there's variety, and it's not just, you know, that one sound. I mean, you turn around, you hear a track like We Keep Fighting, and that has more of kind of almost a modern edge to it, which...
Yeah.
I mean, variety for me is everything. I mean, if every song comes on and sounds the same, there's only one band that can do that, and that's AC/DC. Or Motorhead.
Yeah, exactly.
No, too big.
Right.
Too big.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
The variety, and that's what I dig. And actually, I have a 11-year-old, and her favorite song was We Keep Fighting. And she's like, Daddy, play that again. Play it again.
Interesting that even you mentioned that song because, you know, it's one of those songs that we did in like a 6/8 tempo. You know, and I like to play around with our tempos and the timing and try different feels. And, yeah, and that's just, you know, I think we actually ended up putting 2 songs on the record that had a 6/8 feel, 6/8 time signature feel, which is a little bit different for, you know, a normal rock band. But, you know, why not, you know, and... that was a song that I wrote on my acoustic guitar that I loved it and sounded amazing on acoustic. And I was just like, you know, let's have some fun with it and record it. And, you know, we did. You know, it was a great time recording it. I wanted it to kind of have more of an alternative kind of a feel to it and a little different vibe than some of the other songs on the record. And, you know, I think we were able to accomplish that with that specific track.
I think you totally did. And like I said, that comes... brought in that variety, that modern kind of alternative edge. And, man, I think you hit right actually what you were looking for that tune, for sure.
No, that's cool, and it's very interesting that you guys picked that one out off the album. It's definitely one of my favorites as well.
You know, another one, and there's several, but I guess we don't want to go down through all 12 of them, but or maybe you do, but Save
Sure.
Me Now is another one that's really kind of grabbed my ear, actually over the last few days, is one of the ones that I really dig, too. What's kind of the origin behind that song?
Thank you.
I mean, that's funny that you should mention that song, because it, you know, our manager, his favorite song on the whole album, and we weren't playing it in the set, and he was just like, I don't understand you guys. Like, why aren't you playing your best song in the set? And I was like, you know, I was like, how am I supposed to know what the best, you know, I'm so close to all the music.
Yeah.
I'm like, I think they're all the best song, and I don't know. You know, I'm too close to it. So he's like, I'm telling you guys, you got to get into the set. So we actually put it as the opening song now in our set, and we open up with that song every night. And it's been a home run for us. It's just the fans go crazy for it. They love it, you know. It's a feel-good rock and roll song. And if you see the video, you know, we kind of did a little take on a little 50s vibe there on that video. Yeah, the song has been another success for us as well. And it's been a fan favorite live for us, and especially being for our opening song. You know, we really wanted to put a special, strong song to open up with, because it's the first impression that people get, you know.
Yeah.
So we went for it, and it's been a great decision. And, yeah, that song has just been kicking butt for us ever since we decided to make that decision to put it as the opening track.
Well, in regards to the videos, and that's what I found very interesting about you guys, and, you know, with the way the music industry is these days, you've got to figure out better ways to try to market yourself. And it looks like you guys have, you shot like four or five videos, and I think that's awesome. And is that the medium? I mean, one of them I saw on YouTube had over a million, is like a million and a half hits. So apparently that's working big time for you guys.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it seems like we've kind of connected with our fan base and connected with fans in general. And, you know, we don't spend a tremendous amount of money on our videos. We try to be creative. You know, we try to change up location where we're shooting and stuff, and pretty much keep it along the lines of simplicity. And, you know, I mean, we've had a great time shooting the videos. I mean, we're in a day and age where things are very visual. And, you know, and the online market is a critical and crucial market for us. And we just try to, you know, keep an open line of communication with our fan base online, kind of get into their heads to kind of see what it is that they're looking for, what it is that they really enjoy from us. And we try to provide them with that, as well as, you know, feeding our wants and our needs to what it is that we want to do. And it's kind of a mixed-matched effort. And it seems to be working for us, because the fans, you know, seem to be enjoying what they're watching. You know, the numbers kind of show it, you know. And, so we just kind of just have a real good time with it. And we actually, you know, this December, once this tour is done, we actually plan on recording one more video as well this December. And like I said, we're going to get started on tracking music for the second album.
Nice, nice. Well, a really curious question for me is, you've been on tour with the crew and Alice Cooper. Has either band, or is there one band in particular that's kind of taken you under their wing more than the other? Has Alice said, hey, guys, let's chat, or a Nikki Sixx or a Vince Neil or somebody like that, that kind of take you under their wing? Or what's the relationship kind of like?
It's a great question, and, you know, we obviously came on this tour with, you know, we've had Big Eyes, and we pretty much, you know, this is a new experience for us, and we pretty much just wanted to go along with the program and stay out of people's way, and we didn't really want to approach anyone. If they approached us, we would just allow that to happen kind of organically. And the first one to come up to us and introduce themselves to us was Nikki Sixx. Very, very cool. He actually ate lunch with us, and we've become very good friends since then. And he always asks us, how's the tour going for you guys? And he really digs our sound, and he sees what's going on. He plays us on his syndicated radio show all the time. And he was the first one to really reach out to us. And, you know, the other guys in Motley Crue are very cool. I mean, they're pretty private guys, but they're cool, man. It's like, you know, they tell us how they really dig what we're doing. And you can kind of get that sense from them that they appreciate, you know, our effort. And, you know, and as far as, you know, the guys in Alice Cooper, I mean, the band itself, all the guys in the band and the one girl, Nita Strauss, she's amazing. We all get along tremendously well. We go out with them all the time. We hang out with them all the time. We write music with them. So the vibe with us, the Raskins, and the band of Alice Cooper couldn't be any better. We all get along very well, and, you know, it feels really good, and we're all really good friends now. And then we started developing our relationship with Alice Cooper. Alice actually took Roger and I out to the movies. It was just my brother, myself, Alice Cooper, and his wife. So we went to see the new Brad Pitt movie the other night. So, yeah, took us out to the movies, bought us popcorn. I'm sitting there at a movie with Alice Cooper.
How many people can say that?
You know, it's been that kind of a tour for us, man. It's a dream come true. I mean, to be able to tour with these rock icons and to be able to be appreciated by them and to be respected by them, it's pretty much, I'm speechless by it. You know, we've learned so much in the process as well. They're such, you know, consummate professionals. You know, people don't really realize what it takes to put on this major production, you know, that they do night in and night out. But it's been a tremendous experience for us, and really don't know what more to say than that, but it's just been an incredible adventure for us thus far.
Well, Logan, before I let you go, is there anything you'd like to tell the fans out there?
No, I mean, absolutely. I mean, look, you know, the Raskins have worked very hard to get to this point. You know, we've done it on our own. You know, we recorded the album on our own. We built up the fan base one fan at a time. I want all the fans to know out there, look, if you write us on Facebook, we'll write you back. If you message us, we'll message you back. You know, we do meet and greets after every show. I want to know who our fans are. I want to meet them face to face. I want to shake their hand. I want to sign autographs. I want to take photos. And that's, you know, we pride ourselves in the relationship that we have with our fans, and I want them to know how much we appreciate them and how much that will be. We want to continue to provide great rock and roll music to them, and that anytime they come out to a rock show, they're always going to get 110% of the Raskins, no matter what size the venue, no matter how many fans are out there. So they're a huge part of our life, and we wouldn't be here without them. So I want to give a big shout out and thank you to all of them.
Awesome, man. Well, Logan, we want to thank you for coming on the Genghis and Ragman show here on therighttorock.com, and we wish you the most of luck, and hopefully on that second record, would like to catch you live, and we'll be able to talk to you again.
Hey, man, I really appreciate you taking the time, and absolutely, you know, as soon as the record's done, I'll make sure you guys get a copy of it, and hope to see you guys out of the show real soon, but really, thank you so much for having me on, man. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Especially the Broken Man song, which is the theme song to the Right to Rock podcast.
And also, we're going to give high props to our boys in Sonic X. Adam and Joseph have lent us 13 to finish the show, so What you're listening to right now is 13 by Sonic X. So check them out and keep checking us out. And horns up.